Good evening. In the news tonight, the funeral of NYPD officer Miosotis Familia. A new report details continuing spending on criminalization, policing, and mass incarceration at the expense of social safety net programs. Marijuana possession arrests in focus under the de Blasio administration. And RefuseFascism.org has begun 100 hours of protest in front of Fox News Network on 6th Avenue. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Tuesday, July 11th, 2017. First, the senseless death of NYPD officer Miosotis Familia. A sea of police in blue uniforms filled the World Changers Church on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx and the street outside to pay tribute to Familia, a 12-year officer, former healthcare worker, and mother of three. She is a child of immigrants, the first person in her family to go to college. The mayor said she'd always wanted to be a city police officer. Early Wednesday, the 48-year-old was in an RV-like command post stationed in a crime-ridden Bronx precinct when 34-year-old Alexander Bonds walked up to the vehicle, fired once through the passenger window. He struck Familia in the head. Bonds ran from the scene. Police caught up with him, opened fire, killing him after they said he turned a gun on them. Bonds had sought psychiatric care just days earlier. He was a man caught in the revolving door of a failing hospital system where he'd sought psychiatric care. He should never have had a gun. New York, a city grappling with a crisis of illegal guns entering the city through the iron pipeline, and a Congress stalled on passing safe gun laws. Miosotis Familia joined the NYPD back in 2005. She worked her entire career in the Bronx precinct where she was killed. She has a 20-year-old daughter and 12-year-old twins, a boy and a girl. She also was caring for her 86-year-old mother. Here's her eldest daughter.
I know that she's watching. I can feel her. I can feel her presence. I can feel her touch. I can hear her love. The other day, she actually comforted me while I was in her bedroom. And I felt her warmth. And I can find solace in the fact that on the night of July 4th, when I lost her, saw her, before she left to go to work, she came into my doorway and she said, "I love you, I'm going to work now." And she came and she gave me a hug. She gave me a really big, tight hug. And I said, "Oh, I love you, Mom." And I pinched her cheeks because her cheeks were so cute. And then she went back into the doorway. And she looked at me, and I looked at her, and I said, "Can I just have one more hug?" And she said, "Okay, of course you can." And she came, and she hugged me again. And I said, "I love you so much, Mom. I'll see you tomorrow." But I know that when she went to work that night, when she sat in that truck, that she had me and my siblings in her heart, that she had love in her heart, and that she wasn't upset, and she wasn't afraid or nervous.
Familia's troubled murderer was diagnosed with schizophrenia. He had railed about police and prison officers in a Facebook video last fall. In his eulogy at the funeral today, NYPD Chief James O'Neill painted Familia's death in the context of what happens when a whole group of people is demonized. He says the death of Familia is the result.
On the night our nation celebrated its independence, the coward who committed this atrocity did not walk down the street after midnight and shoot just anybody. She shot a cop. Mental illness and medication may have played a part. I don't know. What is certain, however, is that he hated the police. He saw us as the bad guys before, because countless times he heard it in conversation, saw it on television, read it in the newspapers. Combine that toxic blend with his special brand of evil, and you get this funeral. Hate has consequences. When we demonize a whole group of people, whether that group is defined by race, by religion, or by occupation, this is the result. I don't know how else to say it. This was an act of hate, in this case against police officers, the very people who stepped forward and made a promise to protect you day and night. This amazing woman, this mother, this daughter, this sister, this friend, this New York City police officer was assassinated solely because of what she represented and for the responsibility she embraced. All her killer could see was a uniform, even though Miosotis was so much more. He blamed the police for his own terrible choices in life and for the way he emerged after our society agreed he should go away to prison for a while. As a city and as a country, I don't believe we're in the same place we were at the end of 2014, when detectives Rafael Ramos and Wen Jianlu were assassinated under similar circumstances in Brooklyn. We are on firmer ground now, with police and communities working more effectively together. But in mid-2017, there unquestionably is a creeping apathy among the public about the work and role of its dedicated police officers. I think of it this way. You don't really notice the lights are on until they go out. If we do wrong, we are vilified. If we do right, we are ignored. There is little attention paid to positive changes in policing in general, and in this police department in particular, no matter how effective they may be. The manner in which Miosotis was killed should remind everybody that the civility of our society balances on a knife's edge. And the 36,000 uniformed members of the NYPD are just regular people who made a selfless decision to help maintain that balance. There is nothing more human than a 48-year-old mother of three living in the Bronx who decided to swear an oath, put on a uniform, and live a life with meaning. Fighting crime and keeping people safe is not a responsibility that the police take lightly, and neither should the public. While crime continues to go down year after year, that provides little comfort when the fabric of our society, the blanket of public safety we provide, is torn by a senseless, direct assault on one of our protectors. Here are the numbers we don't talk about nearly enough. Since our start in 1845, more than 840 New York City police officers have died in the line of duty. Miosotis is our seventh cop to be shot and killed in just the last 5 years, and she's our third female officer ever to be murdered on the job. Across our nation, 135 police officers were killed in the line of duty last year, the sharpest spike in the last 5 years. And just yesterday, New York State Trooper Joel Davis was killed in the line of duty while responding to a radio run of a domestic dispute in upstate New York. Each of these murdered officers has one thing in common. They lost their lives while protecting the lives of others. Some people say, well, that's what cops signed up for, right? That's their job. Let me tell you something. Regular people sign up to be cops. They sign up for this job of protecting strangers knowing there are inherent risks. But not one of us ever agreed to be murdered in an act of indefensible hate. Not one of us signed up to never return to our family or loved ones. So where were the demonstrations for this single mom who cared for her elderly mother and her own three children? There is anger and sorrow, but why is there no outrage? Because Miosotis was wearing a uniform? Because it was her job? I simply do not accept that. Miosotis was targeted, ambushed, and assassinated. She wasn't given a chance to defend herself. That should matter to every single person who can hear my voice in New York City and beyond.
Of course, it's untrue that there is an outrage in the city about this death. O'Neill paints with a wide brush. Just as the public has been asking police to respect the rights of all members of communities it polices, O'Neill is calling for cooperation, asking the public to watch the backs of police. He says, "We don't turn away from criticism." And as others have said, when assessing the role of officers, O'Neill says, "We put all our societal failures on our police."
If there's not enough drug addiction funding, many say it's the police who should change their tactics. If there's not enough money for mental health, many say it's the cops who need to alter what they're doing out in the streets. If our society hasn't adequately invested in schools, the cops need to figure that out. We tell our police, "You're the counselor, you're the parent, you're the social worker, you're the referee." But policing was never intended to solve all those problems. It's our obligation to continually drive down crime and keep people safe. That's what Mia Sotis vowed to do. And that's the work we vow to continue to in her stead. What we are left with are the memories, moments shared, lives touched, friendships forged. There is no making sense of what is truly senseless. There is no explaining the unexplainable. Words do not do it justice. We cannot fix the hurt. We have to put that in the hands of a higher power. And the higher power I'm talking about is you. We need the public to make a more active role in our city's safety. I'm asking you to connect with your police. Listen to my words. Your police. We are yours. We're here to help. We're here to make things better, but we need your assistance. We need it now more than ever, because no one knows what's going on a street or a block better than those who live and work there every day. That's how your neighborhoods will keep getting better. And that's how we're going to continue to keep driving crime down and keep everybody safe.
Then the NYPD commissioner addressing the NYPD says, "Thanks for your dedication, leadership, and powerful example."
We may not ever match the sacrifice made by Mia Sotis, but surely we can try to match her sense of service. If we cannot match her courage, we can strive to match her devotion. In the last few days, the 4-6 precinct, Police Plaza, all across New York, we've received many, many messages of hope and support. They tell us that people around the nation and around the world love the police very much and mourn with us. They tell us they need us and they are proud of us. I, too, couldn't be more proud of our cops. To the men and women of the NYPD, to the men and women of the NYPD who bravely put on that uniform every day, and they do. It takes courage. And to all those who have come before us, thank you for your dedication, your leadership, and your powerful example. And I also couldn't be more proud of and thankful for Mia Sotis, whom I promote today to Detective First Grade. Please rise and applaud.
NYPD Commissioner James O'Neill at the funeral for NYPD officer Mia Sotis Familia today in the Bronx. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Meanwhile, there's a new report out by PopularDemocracy.org. It finds that over the last 30 years, at both national and local levels, governments have dramatically increased their spending on criminalization, policing, and mass incarceration, while drastically cutting investments in basic infrastructure and slowed investments in social safety net programs. The choice to resource punitive systems instead of stabilizing and nourishing ones doesn't make communities safer, says the report. Study after study shows that a living wage, access to holistic health services and treatment, educational opportunity, and stable housing are far more successful in reducing crime than police or prisons. The report was put together by the Center for Popular Democracy, a national network of 48 grassroots organizations that exists in 32 states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico. Also involved in the report, Law for Black Lives, a network of over 3,000 radical lawyers, law students, and legal workers committed to helping build the power of black communities and organizers, and Black Youth Project 100, BYP 100, an activist member-based organization of black 18 to 35-year-old abolitionist freedom fighters moving towards liberation using a black, queer, feminist lens. The report found in New York, racial disparities in who was impacted by stop and frisk abuses haven't changed under the de Blasio administration. Nearly 89% of stops still target New Yorkers of color, and over 80% of stops don't result in summons or arrests. In 2015, there were nearly 1.8 million punitive interactions between the NYPD and New Yorkers, an estimated 80 to 95% of which occurred between the NYPD and Black and Latino New Yorkers between the ages of 15 and 59. Nearly 95% of juvenile arrests in 2015 involved Black or Latino youth. Close scrutiny of stop and frisk has also revealed other discriminatory policing practices by the NYPD, such as unconstitutional searches and the failure of officers to identify themselves to members of the public during routine activities. For more than 3 years, advocates have attempted to pass the Right to Know Act. They've held protests and demonstrations at City Hall in an effort to pass this act. It would require officers to identify themselves to the public and protect New Yorkers against unconstitutional searches. While the Speaker, the Mayor, and then NYPD Commissioner Bill Bratton agreed to revise certain NYPD patrol guide sections in response to advocacy, police reform advocates, including individual members of the New York City Council, have criticized the implementation as being insufficient and unenforceable. Communities across New York City continue to advocate for passage of the Right to Know Act. And there's controversy over another bill put forth by the New York City Council. It's the POST Act, the Public Oversight of Surveillance Technology Act. It would make clear whether the NYPD has entered into any data-sharing agreements that would enable the federal government directly or indirectly to access its surveillance data. According to the ACLU's Advocacy and Policy Council, Chad Marlowe, this is an important question because once the data is in the hands of the feds, there's nothing to stop members of the Trump administration, like Attorney General Jeff Sessions, from using it to go after immigrants, Muslims, and other vulnerable communities. And there's a new report by the Drug Policy Alliance on NYPD possession arrests. Bob Ganji, running against de Blasio, says despite the mayor's claims, the NYPD continues its aggressive enforcement of racist arrest practices. The report finds that last year, the NYPD made 18,136 marijuana possession arrests, the fourth most common arrest in New York City. 90% involved New Yorkers of color. Of course, the problem with broken windows arrests is that it puts individuals in the system, which can easily lead to more problems, even detention at Rikers. It burdens people needlessly with these criminal records that only increase difficulties they already face in building stable lives for themselves and their families. Ganji says being arrested for marijuana possession can put immigrant New Yorkers in the crosshairs of ICE agents, emboldened by Trump's continuing attacks on foreign-born Americans. Criticizing de Blasio, Ganji says you can't credibly embrace both broken windows policing exemplified by marijuana arrests and immigrant rights. The two postures are in direct conflict. Bob Ganji, running for New York City mayor, is a police reform advocate challenging de Blasio on race and immigrants' rights issues. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. And continuing with the Donald Trump Jr. story, it's clear now that he eagerly accepted help from what was described to him as a Russian government effort to aid his father's campaign with damaging information, dirt about Hillary Clinton. This is according to emails he released publicly today. What's in question is whether Trump's eldest son violated a federal election law against soliciting something of value from foreign nationals. The New York Times, which broke the story, says the June 3, 2016 email sent to Donald Trump Jr. could hardly have been more explicit. One of his father's former Russian business partners had been contacted by a senior Russian government official and was offering to provide the Trump campaign with dirt on Hillary Clinton. The documents, quote, would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia and would be very useful to your father, unquote, read the email. It was written by a trusted intermediary who added, "This is obviously very high-level and sensitive information, but it's part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump." Quote, in one response, Trump Jr. says he would love to hear more. Donald Trump Jr. posted the emails only after he was told the New York Times was set to release them.
There you go. That's Trump's health care plan. Just let him die. That's Trump's health care plan. Cut off the
Refuse fascism, the son Sarah Taylor says all the Trumps should be thrown in jail. Taylor is with other activists in front of Fox News Network in Manhattan. A 100-hour sit-in began this afternoon at the Fox News Network, which activists call the Fascist News Network.
He's a fascist. He came to power leading mobs to chant, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up. That's the kind of thing fascists do. Try to lock up and even threaten to kill his opponent. But I'll tell you something, it's Donald Trump who is a racist, who is a criminal. It was Donald Trump who said bring back the death penalty for the Central Park Five. It was Donald Trump who tried to execute five young black and Latino innocent men. It was Donald Trump. And when he, even after those five teenagers were exonerated, even after they were able to prove their innocence, Donald Trump came out and said they still belong in jail. Donald Trump is a racist. Donald Trump is a bigot. Donald Trump hates women. And we are out here because we refuse to stand for this. And if you know that Donald Trump is the American Hitler, then you cannot sit back. You cannot sit back. We're going to hear one more minute from our brother right here.
To all women, all Donald Trump wants to know is your bra size. It's the only thing he's interested in. He doesn't care if you live or die. He just wants to know how big your boobs are. And that's a fact. I mean, maybe men do think that way, but they keep it inside their heads. This idiot, he's just got to go.
He just wants to know your bra size. That's all, man.
That's right. Donald Trump, and the fascist Fox News Network. Trump and the fascist Fox News Network are sexual predators. They're sexual predators, okay? Bill O'Reilly was a sexual predator, just like Donald Trump. Hannity Combs, I'll tell you, I've been on Fox News. I've been on Fox, I've been on Hannity, I've been on O'Reilly, I've been on Tucker Carlson. The last time I was on Fox News, I will tell you, I went through those doors. I got in the elevator. This young woman, maybe she was an intern, she came and got me to bring me up to the studio. As soon as the elevator doors closed, she started griping about the sexual harassment inside Fox News.
Refuse fascism is calling on people to come and testify and protest against the Trump-Pence regime and what they say is Trump's hate-filled mouthpiece, Fox News. Emma is with Refuse Fascism.
So check it out. We are out here right now at 48th and 6th outside Fox News for 100 hours of no. Why are we here? We're out here to say that the Trump-Pence regime must go. And we are out here today to protest the propaganda arm of Donald Trump, the fascist news network, who is, I mean, one of the things that they do, right, is they whip up all of this hatred against immigrants. They whip up the Islamophobia. That, you know, they're the real fake news. They're the propaganda arm of Donald Trump. And so we're out here to call them out and to say no to the fascist news network. We're going to be out here 100 hours. You should support this. You should, if you're in New York City, you should come out. Come out on your lunch hour. Come out here after work. Send pizzas. We're going to be here day and night until July 15th, building the strength for July 15th protests.
July 15th, Saturday, is a nationwide 15-city protest against the Trump-Pence regime. Anna with Refuse Fascism live streams the protests.
We are in New York City at the Fox News headquarters to protest this fascist news network. This is the propaganda arm of Donald Trump, whipping up hatred, whipping up fear amongst a huge section of people. It's, you know, Fox News and their mouthpieces is the Goebbels of the 21st century, and we're saying no. This is part of July 15th, building for July 15th protests around the country. 100 hours of no. We're going to be out here 100 hours of no, day and night, till July 15th, and then launching a movement to actually drive this regime from power.
Come take a look, read these signs. This is the truth they will never report on Fox News.
This is Sansara Taylor, who is speaking right now on the bullhorn.
Well, we're here not only to tell you the truth, we are here for 100 hours. We will be here day and night. 24/7.
For more, go to refusefascism.org or follow Sansara Taylor, S-U-N-S-A-R-A Taylor, on Twitter. The protest organized by Refuse Fascism is at 6th Avenue, Avenue of the Americas, and 47th Street. Organizers say all are welcome to participate and speak out in the name of humanity. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, July 11th, 2017. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.